We're talking politics today. Caffeine, you're on the bench. Xanax, suit up. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
When you come out and do your monologues, which are really based on what you've read, do you go home and worry about things? Do you worry about this country? Are there things that really bug you that you can't say in the air?
I think one of the dangers, if you are a comedian, which basically I am, if you start to take yourself too seriously, and start to comment on social issues, your sense of humor suffers somewhere. I've seen other people, whose names I won't mention, who do humor. And then somewhere along the line, they start to want to make their views known. I try to do it humorously. I try not to... And we've had some criticism on the show. Some critics over the years says, well, the show has no great sociological value. It's not controversial. It's not deep. The Tonight Show basically is to amuse people, to make them laugh.
Do you get sensitive about the fact that people say, he'll never take a serious controversy? Well, I have an answer to that. I said, now, tell me the last time that Jack Benny, Red Skelton, any comedian, used his show to do serious issues. That's not what I'm there for. Can't they see that?
But you're not...
Why do they think that just because you have a Tonight Show that you must deal in serious issues? That's a danger. It's a real danger. Once you start that, you start to get that self-important feeling that what you say has great import. And, you know, strangely enough, you could use that show as a forum. You could sway people. And I don't think you should as an entertainer.
Makes sense to me, Johnny Carson. I'm glad he came out and said that back in the day, because what it's turned into is kind of a nightmare. Welcome back to the Kate Daly Show. I've got Uncle Milty with me. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
And a big thanks to Dr. Pesta for coming on. Let me say this. I was watching the Country Music Awards show. I just happened to stumble on it. And it was so interesting how it was an ode to God and talent. And then it ended there. And it was nice. It was fun to watch. And it didn't get nasty and political and self-aggrandizing and all the self, you know, gloating that goes on at the other award shows. They ought to take note at what goes on at the Country Music Award shows, because people actually like to watch that and the ratings are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're also very patriotic.
Yes, yes. Well, they talk about God and family, and they talk about all kinds of things on the show, and they're not afraid to. Whereas you watch a typical award show and you watch a Tonight Show, everything's politicized now. Everything. And I my hat's off, my big cowboy hat tip to Country Music Awards for not doing that and not becoming so self-important. I saw a little bit more humility there, and I thought, you know, gosh, why can't it just be that way? And I love Johnny Carson's comments, because like he said I could use this as a very dangerous platform, because people will mix up my personality with what I'm saying about politics, and I really could do some damage. And he recognized that. So he said, I hold myself back from doing that. I don't want to use a comedy platform for damage. I have to respect that. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
And he was funny, and people loved it because he was just funny. What happened to those days?
Well, comedians have turned into cowards anymore.
Yeah.
They won't tell a funny joke if it in any way may offend someone.
I know.
I mean, good humor always offends someone.
Yes.
Always.
Yes. I totally get it. And I like that they used to do that. The numbers have sincerely plummeted. They went from 7 million on average during the 7 to 9 million during Carson. Then it went down to about 6 million for Leno. And Leno tried to kind of stay away a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And then it went down to 2 million per show and 1.5 million per host now. That's how far it's plummeted since that happened. I did a whole show on that, the numbers, because it's that crazy. This is an hour in which you can call up 888-673-1450, 888-673-1450. We welcome your live calls all over the place. And we have the removal of DHS, right?
Yeah.
Kirsten. And then we also have the ousting of Secret Service, the head of Secret Service, because, of course, the Chinese spy found on Trump's property might have had something to do with it.
Yeah, a little bit.
And so, you know, is this a matter a big matter? Should it be embellished to the point where it's insane and people are like, oh, the world is fine, because there were some firings. It's so funny to me because there's firings in every presidency. This isn't new. It's not different. When you find people aren't doing their job, or you find disloyal people, or you find people that you find out about, or whatever, you let them go. What's so hard about this? I think even really the bigger question not being posed out there is the need for DHS. It is the interlocking of the agencies and where they meet and where they don't meet. It's very hard to find what the agencies are actually about now because we have so many different agencies at play anymore.
Bunch.
Yeah. And so I don't even know if they know what their role is anymore. We just have too much government. And this is a perfect example of it. It's they keep bumping into each other. That's your purview. That's my purview. What are you doing? What am I doing? I mean, it's getting to the point where I think it's pointing out. Let's just say that it's a huge window into too much government and the need to maybe rein that in. Do you think? Like the understatement of my show for 8 years. Do you think it ought to be reined in by now? Because you have all of these different agencies at play. And what is their true role? It's kind of like Secret Service. Secret Service used to be Treasury Department. Then I think it got moved to DHS. All kinds of shuffling of what their positions are and their roles are. If you want something done at the border and DHS is responsible now for what's at the border, because DHS wasn't around before 9/11. We didn't have DHS the way it is now. Then wouldn't you fire that person after set amount of time and say, well, that's just not working. Let's take a caller. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hi. I have an emergency announcement for you.
Okay.
I heard last week there was a doctor on Relevant Radio, that's Catholic Radio.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And she said all the children coming across the southern border have contagious measles.
Well, I don't think that's actually true, but I think that's embellished. I think that the measles in of itself is basically a 10-day or 7-day, even according to the Brady Bunch. Remember the Brady Bunch? They said measles, that's the best thing you can get because you get like a little fever and you're out for a week and then you're back at school. I think that that's being very embellished. I think that people could come over with diseases, yes, that we're not accustomed to. So that is a problem, but I don't think every child's coming over with that.
What I really am concerned about is that, you know, there's an illegal aliens have come across the border, okay?
Yeah.
They're aliens and they're illegal. But a disease is an equal opportunity. It's an alien invader.
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be, you know, if they came across the regular way, they would have been checked for this stuff.
Well,
we are placing ourselves at risk for something that we shouldn't be placing ourselves at risk for.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I really think that the American people have been duped. You know, they've said, oh, be kind, be nice, let them across the border.
No,
they've not thought this thing through. And
it's changing our country, and it's doing it at a sweeping rate, and there's every need in the world now, because of what's coming across, to have a border and to have an enforced border. I totally agree with you.
Well, I think it's time for the American people to wake up, because by the time they wake up, they're going to have diseases they can't handle, and they're going to wonder, well, why didn't the government do something? And Trump is like jumping up and down and saying, close the border, close the border. We have a problem here. And by the time we wake up to this, it may be so severe we can't handle it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm really concerned about it. And I thank you for saying, you know, I think it's a little embellished.
Yeah.
Take a tranquilizer.
Well, except that the problem of people coming over the border is still the biggest problem, because they're coming over and they're given the chance for asylum, and everyone wants asylum. I mean, it might not even be a case of asylum, yet they're claiming asylum so they can stay. We have a huge problem.
The thing is, we are really, our birth rate is down. We have, if you want anything left of your culture and the way you do things,
we cease to be America.
You better stabilize your own people. And two, you better start evangelizing. You better start telling them what's true. And these people don't know from Jack.
Right.
If they think that the Democrats have saved them from the horrors in their own country, wait till they find out the horrors that are here.
Yes.
MS-13 is here.
Yes.
We have had, in my city alone in Chicago, we have had We had an outbreak of measles. We haven't had measles since the year 2000.
Right. But there's only there's only 350 cases countrywide, and they're very small. It's a very small amount of people. It's a 10-day cold or 7-day cold. It really doesn't amount to anything. There was one death 3 years ago, and before that, a couple of years passed before there was just one death, and that could be complications from something else. This isn't a killer disease. It's just something that the media loves to hype, and they've done an excellent job at hyping it into something it's not. Back in the time of the 70s, we were almost thrilled to get it, and you would actually make sure all your kids got it at the same time so that you built up the antibodies. And so they're really making that as the case, that case of fear, when really it should be people coming into our border to change our country fundamentally. We cease to be America after a certain amount of time when we just let open the floodgates. Then we don't have a sovereign nation that can live by its ideals and laws of the Constitution. I love your phone call. Thank you for that. I love it. It's just that they embellish that aspect alone. It doesn't mean it's not happening. It just means that it's being heavily, heavily pushed.
Yeah, and it is. And again, they don't tell the whole story. In 1980, worldwide, 2.6 million people died of measles. Worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Worldwide. We're not talking about America.
Yeah. When vaccination started by 1990, 10 years later, that 2.6 million dropped to 545,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2014, dropped to 73,000 people worldwide.
Yeah.
The population of the world is 8 trillion people.
Billion, yeah. 8 billion people. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Billion, not trillion. Yeah. 8 billion people.
Well, you know, there's something to say, and I did a show about this not too long ago. You can look it up on podcast, is that at certain ages, as we're growing up, your immune system needs to be hit with certain things because it does things in an order. And so when your own body, your own immune system, works up its own antibodies, right, there's lots of things that it can thwart in the future. Some cancer, some of those rates go down for you if you're able to go through the order in which you develop these antibodies. When we do a tremendous amount of vaccinations, we're actually going over that and actually could do some damage by the amount of vaccinations we're getting because your body isn't naturally going through the building of the antibodies. We have to look at the damage we're doing for our future too. And there's two sides to that. Do I think every vaccination is bad? I've never said that on the air, but I do think that the tremendous amount today, you need to really look at and say, do we actually need these? And why are they making such a big deal about measles? There's no point to that.
No, so, there isn't.
But there is a point to the border, and so, yeah, I can see that. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Was a real bad name. You prey on the weakest, fight for no reason. No wonder we get blamed. Copperhead laughs and kiss my ass. You bark, but there ain't much bite. You rattle that tail, but it's fear I smell. I think you're shaking out of fright.
Hi there, welcome back. That's the Rattlesnake song. It's actually written about politics.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Eric Church song. And it was about politics. Oddly enough, the guy is a Bernie Sanders fan. Isn't that crazy?
Oh my gosh.
I know, a socialist fan. but he talks about the two parties fighting as if Bernie's not part of that. It's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
But he talked about the rattlesnakes fighting and causing everybody to fight. So it's an interesting song. It's kind of a funny song, actually. But it's talking about their venom, using their venom. And there is a lot to be said about politics in general and going after that. You know, when we were talking to Dr. Pesta, we were talking about the fact that there's this embellished swelling of crazy going on. And a while back on the show, I remember we said it's showing itself. It's kind of funny to sit back and watch it because they're trying to out-liberal each other. They're trying to get to a place that's just, people are looking around going, do we live in an insane world? Because do they listen to themselves? They actually believe it.
Apparently they do. Yeah.
They do. And so we were talking about that for a large portion of the hour because we are getting to a kind of a, I don't know, it's like a new era of of thought. You can make a fact because you say it's a fact, even though it's an assumption. You can just sort of have it swell in your mind. I know social media plays a part of this. You know, you have an initial thought to something that comes out. Then you get on social media and it ratchets it up. It ratchets it up, the emotion. You can see it happening. And people go into full tailspins over information. And then you have to step back and go, now, wait a minute, look at the big picture. We're talking about one case happened in one place. It doesn't even affect you. Why are you melting down over this?
And yet they seem so capable of putting on the blinders and not seeing the reality.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the real issues. I just don't want to see the reality of this. I'd rather be upset over nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hyper focus on something that there's not much to. We'll make it something, but let's not look at the big picture of events going on that we probably should pay more attention to. I know it's tough to figure out what to pay attention to, what to take in, and what to believe anymore. And I know that's a very difficult thing. We were also talking, Uncle Milty and I, sort of about the virtues too of things that we know have made our society probably better. Yet we don't ever talk about it in that context. We don't ever say, you know, hey, this is not never. We don't ever, we do say. But what I mean is that what makes us work? What makes us work? Because there's an awful lot of tearing down at what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. The tearing down is being done by Americans. Mm-hmm. The ones who see the truth and the virtues of the American society
right.
are usually foreigners, immigrants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They see it. They understand it.
They're the ones that go to city council meetings that are pleading, please, please, even locally, stop the nonsense. You see what you're going to become.
So there is a good article on Intellectual Takeout by Aaron Tao, who's a first-generation Chinese immigrant. And the title of his article is How America's Gun Culture Cultivates Civic Virtue.
And I'm sure that the majority of, say, people on the left went, this is where all of our problems are. No, actually, look back in history. Let's look at big picture right now. And let's like really look at what has made us, what's reduced our crime in America is probably the ownership of private guns.
He goes all the way back to de Tocqueville and he quotes de Tocqueville. It is through the enjoyment of a dangerous freedom that Americans learn the art of reducing freedom's perils.
Ooh.
That's a...
Yeah, yeah, I know.
That's an amazing statement.
I love it. He said most people, because of his ancestry, right, and most people are often surprised to learn that he is a gun owner and a firm defender of the Second Amendment. And he says, after all, a first-generation Chinese-American immigrant, they don't fit the stereotype of the typical American gun owner, right? Because the media has portrayed the typical gun owner in America is some dumb redneck who sits on in his easy chair and drinks a beer and loves his guns. You know, they made people out to be idiots that like to have, you know, self-defense mechanism. And so he's saying, look, he says, of all America's cherished freedoms, the natural and unalienable right of self-defense, recognized and protected, not granted, and he's right on, that's granted by God, by the Second Amendment, which is government protection, he probably should have furthered that sentence, took me to the longest to fully embrace. But he says, as an open-minded rationalist, the lessons of history and statistical research proved overwhelming. Not to mention, he said, the sheer fun of learning the basic operations and mechanics of firearms and eventually helped me understand why tens of millions of my fellow Americans treasure their right to keep and bear arms. Amen. I love this guy.
He made a little bit of a mistake.
Yeah,
it's more than tens of millions.
Yeah.
By far.
Yes, that's very, very true. But he says from the colonists, you know, winning their independence, let's say from Great Britain, to African-Americans vindicating their civil rights, he says the role of gun is inseparable from American identity. That is very true. Look at the cultures in which they took the self-defense mechanism away from the people. What happened? Shock and awe, yes.
They don't exist anymore.
They don't. They don't. They were annihilated by their own government. They were robbed of their liberty by their own government. We've had mass atrocities because of this. And so what he was recognizing was the gun is the ultimate multi-purpose tool that empowers its user with the means to put food on the table as well as preserve one's life, whether against common street criminals or government tyranny. The philosophical underpinnings and lived experiences that shaped American gun culture all matter. They reinforce each other. And he said that the cultivation of civic virtue, and I know leftists would be spinning at this. They would be full exorcist mode, you know, because civic virtue, how does gun ownership equate to civic virtue?
It's an interesting thought. And
true.
Yeah. But to notice that, you know, mm-hmm. you have to know that owning and shooting a gun promotes many different things for us.
It does.
Self-reliance. Personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. Gun owners are the most responsible. When it comes to their guns, they're extremely responsible.
Right.
Otherwise, we'd have tens of thousands of accidents a year if
don't.
They weren't.
And we don't.
And we do not.
They make it seem as if we do.
Oh,
but
yeah,
actually,
but
if you look
don't.
At the numbers. Mm-hmm.
And,
that's
of
true.
Course, it creates a community of people.
Right.
When you go to a gun range and parents are teaching their kids how to
mm-hmm.
shoot, men instructing other people.
Yeah.
I'm a certified NRA certified instructor for firearms. All of those things bring people together. And what do they discuss during these times? Why we have guns?
Exactly. And it's not just because somebody's an imbecile.
No.
And machismo is winning out. That has nothing to do with
not
it.
Not a bit.
If anything, like this gentleman said, he said, there's a large number of foreign tourists eager to know how to operate one, eager to know, you know, wanting this for themselves. No wonder. Of course they do.
Any shooting range in the country
mm-hmm.
where tourists come to
mm-hmm.
get visitors from other countries begging.
Yeah.
Can we rent a gun? Can we shoot your gun? Can we come to the range? Can we learn about guns? They don't even have them in their countries.
Right.
It's amazing when you hear that from foreigners.
I know. You know what's funny is you can look at some of these places, gun clubs and ranges and trade shows. And what do they foster there? They're fostering some community, like you said, interaction. Are they fostering hate? Are they fostering crime? Are they fostering all of these things? But you know what? Go to some of these conventions of people that are clamoring for socialism, clamoring for communism. Look at what they're espousing. Go to a march, you know, and see for yourself the kind of hatred that ensues. This author was pointing out, he said, when you go to a trade show or a gun club, everyone's pretty nice to each other. It's mm-hmm. all about respect. It's all about the fact that you're respecting each other, that there's there's things to be learned, and you're there to learn them about your mechanism of self-defense. You are there to understand a little bit more how to be self-reliant. You're there to be nice to your neighbor standing next to you that's firing next to you. Are you seeing slings and arrows of hate? Are you seeing people that are espousing that you go out and use your gun for violence? Never. Uh-uh. And he's saying this is where the virtue comes from. You know, I hadn't really thought of it that way until I read this. I hadn't really thought of it in the way of civic culture, civic virtue, because how I always say, by their fruit, you shall know them.
Mm-hmm.
The fruit of this has always been about respect, education, learning, goodness, your ode to your God-given right, your love for your country that would espouse such an ideal and then set forth to put it in writing so that the government then was held to the protection of it. That's what you find. So what is the fruit of that tree? The fruit of that tree is really people leaving that are leaving that gun show or trade show or gun club liking and loving their neighbor.
Yes.
And their own self-reliance. That's wonderful. How would you like to go to a Southern Poverty Law Convention? How would you like to go to some of these nut jobs out there who are all about violence? When the big game happened, the big basketball victory
uh-huh,
over the weekend,
uh-huh.
what were they doing? They were turning cars over and being violent. And I see a lot of people out there being very violent, but you'll never find that. You'll never find it at some place that espouses the Second Amendment.
Yeah, not with the people who understand the virtues of gun ownership.
Isn't that amazing when you really step back? And he said, you know, empowering people to be prepared. What a wonderful thing that is, because that's really what it's about. You're saying be prepared, be self-reliant and prepared, expand your knowledge, and really look at this as a sense of burning conviction that you, your family, and your community are safer and freer because you partake in carrying a gun or having one in your own self-defense.
It gives you an opportunity to instruct people about history, too, and mm-hmm. what's happened in countries where gun ownership was disallowed and how once people weren't able to defend themselves, how tyrants took over.
Isn't that so true? Confidence is contagious, he said. People want to be empowered. That's how the gun culture was built. Well, it was built because we wanted to be able to free ourselves of a tyrannical government,
yes.
because we could see in the past what happened when people were not afforded that God-given right or government that the government should protect that right for people because it is God-given. So I don't see it as gun culture. I see it as so I disagree with him a little bit. I see it as a culture not about guns, but just about self-defense against government or crime that can happen to you. But he talks about the freedom of our citizens. When you're really diving into this and making this a part of your life, he said it only makes you better. He was right.
You know, but I disagree a little bit what you just said about gun culture.
Well, it's
because everyone will defend themselves
mm-hmm.
using whatever weapon they
yes.
have available.
Yes.
So there is a difference when it comes to allowing gun ownership. And
mm-hmm.
countries that don't, mm-hmm. you don't have that same ability to defend yourself.
It gun culture. I would just call it your God-given ability to defend yourself. I mean, I don't want to make it about something it's not, but at the same time, what he's saying is right. We'll talk about this.
Yeah.
Kate Daly Show, be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
That's right. Step right up and listen to a concerned citizen speak his piece. I tell you a little something that my daddy told me. My basic fundamentals if you want to be free. Cause son, there's something wrong.
That's kind of a perfect song, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Based on what we're chatting about.
Absolutely.
Welcome back to the Kate Daly Show. Happy to have you. And talking about something I really hadn't given a whole lot of thought, and that was the gun culture as far as what we're talking about. We'll talk about that phrase. But the sort of the outcome of the Second Amendment and how this author writes, it's a civic virtue. It actually makes our communities better. And I love that. I love that whole angle of that because I hadn't really thought about that. Go to a Black Lives Matter event, you're going to see a lot of violence. Go to a gun club, no violence at all. No talk of violence. And talk about responsibility, yes. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just said, I don't know if I'm, if you already spoke about it. I want to talk about what Romney said Friday night about the guns. I don't know if you've heard or not. But
I haven't heard.
There was a person there that stood up and said, you know, my wife and I retired here. We want to go visit all the states. I've got my gun permits mm-hmm. and all and everything. He said, but there's only a third of the states that I can take them into to protect. He said, I got them to protect myself. And instead of saying, yeah, we need to get all the states together, he said, well, each state has their own right. And he says, if you don't like it, don't go visit those states. Can you imagine a president of the United States saying, if you don't like it, don't visit those states?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
gosh.
We're talking about California, Washington,
thank
all, all those historical places.
That's crazy.
Don't go visit them. I can't believe he said that.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate the call. A senator from Utah saying that, oh, my gosh, he wasn't saying, hey, that Second Amendment's important and we need to be able to have our Second Amendment protected. He's saying, oh, just go into the states where you can be protected and forget about the rest.
That's totally ignoring the fact that the states have no right to override the Second Amendment.
And how many senators and congressmen feel that way? That is a sad state of affairs. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
I'm so sorry you weren't there for the Romney fiasco.
Oh, well, yes, I wasn't. I have better things. Yeah, I wasn't. But any thoughts on what we're talking about as far as virtue?
Well, in that he chose a small room for us to meet in.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't room for everybody. And they asked his staff why, and they said he wanted control of the crowd.
I thought he was there to serve.
And then the police said, it's unsafe, and moved us to a big room.
Yeah.
And then his son stood at the door and gave the cutoff sign to the staff putting out chairs. He wanted no more chairs put out in the room.
Yeah, it's getting...
They could still have control of the crowd.
Thank you for that. It's getting... You know
and
what?
And then he showed up late.
Uh-huh. Which happened?
Gave his statement.
Mm-hmm.
Took, I think, 6 or 7 questions and then cut it off and said, I've got to go.
This doesn't surprise me. Thank you for that, though. Thanks for the update. Do you know what? No matter what state you're listening to from right now, I'm going to guarantee that your, whatever you want to call it, if you want to call it a town hall, I don't. I call it a couple people hall. If you're, I'll bet you that your senator of your state or your congressman, you're getting the same thing in your state. Chicago listening, Missouri listening, all over California. Let me just tell you, that's exactly what's going on in every state. My state's not unique.
They have no interest in listening to what the people say. They want the people to listen to what they say.
Yes, and they don't want... When they say control the crowd, they want to control their answers.
Yes.
Be answerable to the people? Oh, no. We're going to find this more and more and more to the point where most all of them... And I don't do predictions on this show. I think it's silly to do predictions. But I did say what I see coming is all televised or Facebook ones where they can really control the outcome of a town hall and never in person. We're going to get to the point where they don't go in person. You know why? Because the people are fed up with what they're hearing and the constant misinformation, disinformation coming, and so people are getting a little bit more outspoken, and they don't like that so much.
No,
they don't like it at all. We were talking about gun culture when we left that conversation in the last segment, and what I was talking about was gun culture, and you made a point, and you were saying what about that? Because you were saying, well, you don't want people to think that self-defense is a knife, because it's different than a gun, and I totally agree with that.
Yeah, because you had said, well, I don't like the gun culture. It should be a self-defense culture. But self-defense involves a lot of things. Martial arts, knives.
Right.
Bricks, rocks.
When I see gun culture, what I'm thinking is they think we worship the gun.
No.
So that's what all I was saying about it was I think that that's sort of the mantra. We worship the gun. I don't know how that happens, but that I hear that again and again. And I think when I see gun culture, that's what I think of. But I see your point.
Well,
it's not just a self-defense culture, because guns work. They work in distance. They work better than being right up against somebody.
And they're the only defense against another gun.
Yes, yes.
Like the old saying, don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Yes, it's so true. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, what they're doing is they're mixing up the gun culture with family culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we grew up, there were guns in our family.
Yeah.
We went out and shot together. I mean, it was about the family time, not the gun time. But we had fun with it. I mean, it was a rite of passage to grow up and learn how to shoot and learn how to hunt.
And I
think they're leaving that part of it out, because I never had a desire to point my gun at a friend.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was always...
Yes.
We were taught how to use...
Responsibility.
And it was...
Yeah. Yeah. Responsibility.
So I think they're just getting it twisted.
You know, I've never, ever even heard of a case where a dad went out to teach their son about how to use a gun and then just couldn't wait to say, gee, can't wait to use this to kill people. This is how you do it. I mean, I've never heard of that in my entire lifetime.
In fact, I'm 53 now, and when I first went duck hunting, you know, you had to be like 14.
Right, right.
And I remember going out, and everybody was there, and I had my shotgun, and I didn't have a dad really growing up. My uncles and things would help me. Mm-hmm. But I had my brother-in-law's dad came up to me, and he's kind of a burly guy, and he says, okay, now, this is your first hunt. You've got a gun. You know how to use it.
Right.
If I see you pointing at it in the wrong direction, other than the sky or the ground, I'm going to kick your butt. And I just, you know, whoa.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I knew he loved me, you know, but I never forgot that. And I never pointed it where I shouldn't point it.
Yep. I I love your
call. People are missing that.
I love your call. It's a great point. Thank you. Family culture. Families were built on the idea when they would talk about the Second Amendment or talk about guns of responsibility, of love, of respect. That is the fruit of that tree. Always has been. Always has been. And isn't it funny when I was mentioning like Black Lives Matter and all these different groups, they are driven by violence. They're driven by hate. And never once have I ever witnessed anything revolving around like the trade shows or the gun clubs or anything about the Second Amendment that's ever had that same result.
No.
It really isn't. It's a neat thought because I truly, I don't know why doing the show so long, just never really had put that together and thought about that, given it good thought.
In some ways, modern life has has really hurt us in some ways. If you look at history, in the westward movement of the United States, if there was a situation where a family had to defend itself, you saw the mother, the son, the child all pick up their firearms to help defend the family.
Yes.
Today, you don't see a need for that.
No.
So.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hi there. Go right ahead.
Johnny Carson had style.
Oh, the opening clip. Yeah, he was a liberal, but, you know, he didn't wear it on his sleeve. He didn't parade it around as some political quest to show you, you know, that he was a liberal. He really didn't. He kind of kept it back. He reined it in a little bit.
The communists have neither.
The what?
The communists have neither style or class.
Ah.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. They don't. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, true. Very, very true. That opening clip of Johnny Carson saying why he doesn't go into politics and use his show for politics, if you're just joining us and didn't hear that, and how they are now, because it can be a weapon, you know, of sorts. But I love this whole talk on culture, I thought, or virtue. I thought there's much to be said about this. And I loved that this guy, and I really do, I understand where you're coming from on gun culture, because it can't just be self-defense. That's what they would love to do. The left would like to make it like, you know, you have a butter knife. Good for you. You can go defend yourself.
Defend
you don't
yourself.
Need a gun. But have you ever noticed how much they attack the gun? It's funny that no matter what, it doesn't matter how people die. If they die by gun, then obviously that's the mantra that they pick up and use as far as see, it was the gun. But guns have done nothing but foster relationships of respect that I can tell.
And you never hear them focus on how can we get guns out of the hands of criminals?
Right.
You never hear that statement.
It's just that everybody's a would-be criminal.
Yeah.
Everybody that has a gun, you just never know when you're going to turn into a psychopath. And now they're going after the mentally ill. Mentally ill only account for 5% of the crime going on. Most of the time, psychopaths are a little too smart to actually withstand a mental health diagnosis. Usually it's the psychopath is the one that you fear, and it's not the most prevalent group of people, is it? It's a very small minority of actual psychopaths that carry out really, or I would say just people that want to carry out a crime. But I think really his take on this as somebody coming over to this country that was Chinese, I promise you, if there's anything that I've ever really witnessed, it's the city council meetings. It's the ways in which people will show up when somebody's talking about the Constitution and they're from another country and they're begging and pleading and loud and verbal about, please, you don't understand how important those things are that the government must protect. And they're warning us, not warning us from the grave, they're very much alive, but warning us from their relatives' graves. Warning us from their culture that was annihilated. And we don't seem to want to listen to those people and learn their lessons. Here's somebody's crying. I'll never forget Skousen speaking at a Constitution event from the National Constitution Studies. And there were people in the back making noise because they were so insistent on being heard because they wanted to warn people what happens when you do not have the benefit of the things we do here in America, the government protected rights that we're supposed to have. And people thought they were heckling. They were ushered out. They weren't. They were actually people in the back warning, warning, warning. And we have to listen to these people.
Oh, yeah.
We have to. What's wrong with us?
Another thing that people don't seem to get when this mental illness subject comes up is the difference between a psychopath and a sociopath.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there's huge differences there. And sociopaths have antisocial disorders. Those are the kind of people that do the really weird social things, you know?
Yeah.
Kidnap.
Yeah.
Abuse.
Yeah. Right. Become kind of fixed on
psychopaths
that.
Are actually considered more dangerous than sociopaths.
Interesting. But, you know, right now there's a big grab using red flag laws on based on the mental health equivalent, and also the youth, and they are actually the two groups that have the least amount of gun violence. Yet this is what's being used to take guns from people. And I tell you, what I love most about this was the signaling of, listen, our virtue as a country. One of the things that built that was the continuous generational virtue that was handed down in responsibility and love for your neighbor, in wanting to defend your neighbor and defend yourself and your family.
Yes.
That there's something very great about this, and that when we lose that, what a huge problem that would be. And obviously I say problem facetiously because it would be worse than that. We're talking about a government that would be able to overrun its people. The reason that the average gun crime is only at 13,000 in a country of 330 million people is because 90% of the gun owners out there, I mean, that's a whopping amount. We're not talking 50% or 30%. We're talking 90%, actually, are very responsible people that love their country, their self, and their neighbor. And their community. That culture has risen up, and that is who we are as a nation. That's the fruit of that tree. So we lose that, we lose what America is. And these nut jobs out there that are parading around, and these congressmen and senators that think the red flag laws are something that need to be implemented, they're using the Trojan horse of mental health and the youth as their way to rob you of your gun. Don't buy into it, don't listen to it, don't believe it. It really is. They have to go after these couple of vulnerable classes because they have nothing else. They don't have anything else in their arsenal of argument. They just don't. They have to go after two small groups that have nothing to do with much of anything when it comes to gun violence.
Of course.
To get their way. Don't believe them. Talk to them. Let them know how important this is and what has built our country. And you know, thank goodness for authors like this. I think that guy was great.
They should read that article and spread it around.
It's on intellectualtakeout.org. Thank you, Uncle Milty. Uh-huh. Really appreciate you.
My pleasure.
Of course, be faithful, be fearless. See you back here tomorrow. And everything's going up on podcast. Check it out, katedalyradio.com.